Well, last night, yesterday actually, all day, you watched some basketball or were you busy, man?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started watching that Golden State game, of course, because Game 7 I always love. Can't go wrong with a Game 7. But, yeah, man, just kind of looking around the league, trying to figure out, you know, the Knicks game was kind of fun. But
yo,
getting into that game seven, man.
I was like, I think the Heat are a better team. I mean, you look at what they can do, and they didn't have as good of a regular season, but they're probably the better team. So they come in and they steal game one from the Knicks at home. Yeah, so dude. New York, Madison Square Garden was popping for exactly one half. And then now it's going to be filled with anxiety and depression for another full year. So that's pretty much all there is going on there. Obviously, they have a chance to go to Miami and tie it up if they win the next game. But like you said, 50 points by Steph in a game seven.
Unbelievable, bro.
And you know what the thing is about Steph is, like, we've seen him so many times go on these, like, flurries where it's just like boom, 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 boom.
Can't stop.
But it wasn't like a flurry. It was like, I feel like he put up, like, legitimately, like, 13 points per quarter. I didn't look at it, but it was just like he consistently was just cooking. And there were a couple times where he had, like, 6 or 8 points in a row. But then it was just like you would kind of, like, he would get back into the flow of things and then you kind of forget about him. Like, not really, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think the Kings, they need a Dort. You know what I mean? They needed a Dort to make him worn out if he was going to shoot that many shots. I think he almost shot 40 shots, bro.
It was insane. That's the thing about it is that when we talk about this team going into the future, it's going to be going against teams that their last runs are going to be the Golden State Warriors and teams like that. It's just going to happen. It's inevitable. And being able to shut down Steph Curry, because let's just be honest, like, out of all the players I've ever seen play the NBA, Steph is the easiest on his body out of all the players I've ever watched in the NBA. Yes, I mean, he's still hard on his body, but he's not throwing up there dunking everything. He's not going up there mixing his bodies, you know, with the big bodies all the time. He's being very intelligent. So when you look at it, the only way that I look at Steph stepping down at this point would be like a serious injury. Because why not? Why not? His release is always going to stay the same. He's always going to be deadly. And I think he could be one of those guys that plays into his, you know, mid-40s if he wants to and be a very effective player, because the NBA is changing of sorts. And let's just be honest, is Steph is open to being one of those guys like Vince Carter or, you know, these guys that play 20 years, 20 plus years in the league. Why not? You know,
here we saw the Grizzlies, right? They had all the youth and all the energy to kind of, like, we're going to take out one of these old teams, and it didn't happen. But I think there's something to be said. Like, this is the season of the NBA right now. It's not this moment, but it's coming very soon. And maybe Dylan Brooks was a little bit too early to declare it was over. But yeah, you look at these teams, and, like, they're not being able to put up, you know, 60-win regular seasons anymore. They're kind of like, just get into the playoffs and we'll be okay. But now the Warriors and the Lakers have to play each other, and only one team's going to be able to move forward out of those two. It's going to be really fascinating, but that's the result of not having a better regular season record. It's not a conference final matchup. It's, you know.
But let's just talk about it, though. Like, out of all the seasons that I remembered, why did I say in the beginning of the postseason that this was going to be the season where there's going to be an 8 upseed or upset, there's going to be a 7, and there's going to be a 6 upset? Like, why? It's because the NBA is changing so dramatically and so drastically that these are the teams that you have to take a look at and say, Kings were young when they got there. Memphis was young, you know? And when you're playing against seasoned teams that have done it before and you're looking at it like, yeah, we're the better team this year. Yeah, you're right. In the season, you're the better team. But when it comes to playoffs, you're telling me that you think you're a better player than LeBron or Steph?
Yeah.
Like, and then you look on the other side, and I looked at Jimmy Butler and the way he was playing at the end of the season. I was like, you know, you can't step up right here and stop this. Now, I also said that I thought the Thunder would be able to beat Denver as well. And the reason, again, is I think the play-in games are way more valuable right now than they ever have. And if you look at the Major League Baseball, when they introduced the whole wild card, for a few years, wild card teams won it. It's because they get the steam, they get the, you know, they get going, and other teams get rest, and all of a sudden they get down. And this is why I feel like the play-in is almost more valuable at this point than being a 6 seed, because you get that extra game in you, and you get to be able to pick your slot where you play, essentially, so you can be the 7 or 8 seed if you think that you can, you know, play that. So I don't know, man. Like, it's just interesting to me, this whole concept of having a play-in, meaning it's way more valuable, straight up. Lakers recognize that they want to play against Memphis. So what do? I mean, beat the shit out of the Wolves to be able to play against Memphis. You know, and they proved that they deserve to play against Memphis. And the same thing against Golden State. Golden State's out there doing what they're doing because they recognize that they wanted to play against the Kings. What did I say in the beginning of the season? If we get to have one team I want to play against in the playoffs, would be the Kings. So think about that. LeBron says the same thing.
The Kings were good, man. The Kings were good in the regular season, and they played really well some games in the postseason, but it's a 7-game series.
But so is Denver sometimes, and so is, like, these other teams that come out there and they're like, win a bunch of games in the regular season, and they never even get to the conference finals.
You know,
like, that's the thing that's crazy about it.
Let's shift this back to the Thunder real quick and say, like, how do the Thunder avoid being the Kings or the Grizzlies next year? In that, I mean, they put up, you know, 50-plus wins. They're one of the top three teams in their conference. They, you know, have a great situation, but then they get beat in the first round. How do they avoid that?
How do they avoid it? Well, it's right now. I mean, it's the preparation right now by Coach D and everybody else, because now you know what it takes to win playoff games. All right. And for me, I'm looking at it, I'm saying, you know, how do we prepare for these guys to get there? Well, the thing is that with the playoffs is that there's real no preparation. There's just not. I mean, like, you can tell young kids, like, this is how you play. But until you get there, there's no way of, you know, understanding what you're doing, right? So, again, you look at Shea. He's got, what, game 7 under his belt, a couple game 7s under his belt. You've got Dort with a game 7 under his belt. So you've got some experience there. But the reality is that the only way to know if this team is going to be able to avoid that is by getting in the mud. You know, and understanding, can this team get up on a team 2-1 or 3-1? Can they put them away? You know, like, and that's the thing is that, like, I've seen so many teams in the NBA playoffs, especially, that should have beat a team, and they don't. And it's like, what the hell? I mean, think about the New York Knicks, you know, when they beat the Heat. Knicks were 8th seed, Heat were the 1st seed, and the Knicks went out there and beat the Heat. You know, like, there's certain times in history where it's like, oh, that shouldn't have happened. Well, yes, that, and then the Knicks went on to play in the finals. Yeah. So it's just, there's sometimes there's these moments where it's like, how did that happen? Well, if you look at that year, right, what did happen?
It was a lockout.
And who was the MVP and Rookie of the Year?
I don't remember.
Tim Duncan.
Oh, okay.
You know, think about that. That was a change of guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's just crazy. I don't know if he was the MVP or finals MVP that year, but Tim Duncan was. But the point is, San Antonio won their first championship that year. And I look at that as the change of the guard. What happened this year? The 8 seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. 7 seeds. Same thing, right? Why is this happening? It's the change of the guard. And we're seeing it, like, in real life. And so for me, when I'm saying, what is it going to take for this team not to fail in the playoffs? It's like the only way not to fail is by taking your balls out, throwing them on the fucking table and saying, I'm going to play my balls out, period. And that's the only way. And the only way to do that is by having people around you that you trust inside the system and coaching staffs and everything else like that. But, man, you don't know what's up until you get into the fucking bunker, man.
Yeah, and, you know, these playoffs were exceptionally physical for the first round. I think we got maybe a whole playoffs worth of ejections in the first round, but we're going to see
punches.
Yeah, we're going to see things pick up too. Like, I have no doubt about that. This is a game that's supposed to get more and more and more intense. Yes. And hard fouls get more and more hard. It gets very, very crazy. So we saw Sabonis out there with a black eye that reminded me so much of Shea's. Like, Shea got rocked. He chipped his tooth. Who was back out there playing. Sabonis wasn't going to take some time off. He got beat up like crazy in the series. And
Draymond Green was treating him like an uncle would treat a nephew, man, in the backyard. And it was crazy to watch, man.
So that physicality, the strength of the game, when it slows down, when it becomes a possession game, when you're playing against a team like the Warriors or the Lakers, and they're like, okay, we've been here, we've done that. We know what we need to do to get this. Like, that's when, like, I wonder, like, are we going to have to take a year of, you know, Hard Knocks like we did the first year we made it to the playoffs against the Lakers? Or do you think that we're going to be able to push through and not become susceptible to some of these, you know, first-round hiccups like these other teams?
Well, I think it comes to all, like I said prior, was the preparation to getting to the playoffs, all right? So I believe that some of these teams, like the Kings, they went all out. They have a young team. They're tired, you know? And with a young team of unknowing really how to play like this style before, I think what we watched was a team just hit a wall, okay? I think you can say the same thing about Memphis as well, another young team hitting the wall. The key right there is resting players and doing what Sam Presti and Coach D already do and not playing these guys over what, like, I think we watched Shea play an average of like, he would hit to that 35 minute mark, right? Mm-hmm. And like sometimes like, all right, so he'd get to 28 minutes just before the end of the third quarter, okay? He would come out of the game and sometimes coach would put him in that game early. Like it would be 5 minutes, or 3 minutes he put him in the game, back in the game, or 2 minutes back in the game. But typically it was that 5 minutes that he'd be sitting out, 5 to 7 minutes he'd be sitting out. So for me, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, like, that's what's key to keeping these guys healthy. You know, like Shea had some, dings and dents or whatever you want to say, missed a few games here and there. But the reality was, is he was healthy all season. I mean, that's what we got to do. If we're going to have any chance at all in the playoffs, and especially being a high seed and playing at what I would consider another team like the Lakers probably or something like that, that's going to be not a young team, a team, you know, that's older, more experienced, then we got to step up. We got to prove that we can do it by, simple, keeping the guys healthy, keeping the offense and the defense in motion. And if we can get into the playoffs and we're not limping into the playoffs, then we're fine. But I look at all these teams that are getting beat. I mean, they're limping into the playoffs.
Right. So, obviously, adding Chet will help. Getting Kenny back, getting the full strength. But I also have this really strong sense right now that we're going to add a player or two, or some of the players who were on the roster are going to really step up and find ways to contribute. But, like, that's where we need to look at it and say, like, just adding Chet isn't enough for us to get out of the first round. Maybe if he's a better player than he was in college, like he's gotten better off after this year. We could be totally wrong about that assessment, but in the end, like he would have been good enough to get us into the first round. But
yeah, he would have been top six seed easily. Right. Cause I mean, it wasn't what we're like 3 or 4 games away from that top six seed,
but out of the first round, when you're talking about potentially matching up against like the Warriors or the Lakers, like I think we need 2 more role players that bring something the equivalent of like Jay Will or Isaiah Joe, like guys that just come out there.
So you're
blue
saying
collar.
Guys that were developing, or you're saying guys that are maybe
both
older players?
I mean, there's always players that are unrestricted free agents or, you know, undrafted free agents, like that are just at the end of the roster, but they still have skills that we could utilize. And that's why I always go back to Sam Presti and Vince Rosman. Those two guys put together this idea about Isaiah Joe. Like, they brought Joe in. Joe was a Daryl Morey cut at the end of training camp. He was there for, like, nothing for training camp. And he came in, and he gave all the Thunder fans, like, reason to believe. So I'm very confident that Isaiah Joe is not just a singular player, but there's an opportunity to find more players who have elite skill sets that need opportunities.
Alfonsi, what's up, man?
What's up, man?
I'm glad you joining us here today. It's great to see you as well. But I think you're right. I struggle sometimes because I get so stuck on that we have to develop our players, right? That I sometimes forget to take a deeper look into, just the buyout market and different things like that, because there are always veterans that are looking for a squad, you know? And I think it's key for somebody like Dario or somebody like Al Horford. You know, when they're at an end of the road for them, per se, mm-hmm. is that the Thunder have $30-something million in space right now. So for us to go out and seek a trade and have, I think we have a couple, 3 or 4 trade exemptions. Mm-hmm. So for us to go seek a trade and utilize those trade exemptions, or one of those trade exemptions, allows this team, right, to be able to bring somebody in that will help mentor these kids, these young men. So I'm always open to that. I don't want to see a guy that's going to come in and destroy the playing time for Poku or somebody like that. But I do want to see somebody that's going to come in and help this team, and especially if we're getting to the playoffs, that steps up and plays in the minutes that these other young players are going to struggle in.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the early versions, we saw Caron Butler, we saw Derek Fisher be brought along, and then this modern version, you know, it was Mike Muscala, George Hill, Al Horford, like you mentioned, and then last year, you know, we bring in Sarge, and we're like, hey, you can be the 28-year-old, you know, senior statesman mentor for these guys, and
get him a senior discount, buddy.
Right. And I'm just like, like, it's intentional, and it may not, like, I would love Sarge coming back. Like, I've made that clear. But if it's not him, it'll be somebody else who can add something. And I think, I don't remember who exactly, but a number of our Australian listeners have pointed out the progression that the Thunder have made in following Josh Giddey's lead on passing, because he passes into open space. He learned how to do the shuffle, you know, Andrew Gaze style offense when he was a kid, and he's teaching the other guys how to move into open space, and he's using footy, he's using all these different backgrounds, you know, of his games to just... But
do you see when he passes the ball, you know how, like, you see guys that cut and then slow down after they cut?
Yes.
Every single time that Josh has the ball, it's balls to the wall on their cut. Even if they don't get the ball and Josh doesn't find that opening, it's still like these guys are like finishing the play, finishing the cuts, finishing the back doors, you know, and they're finishing them hard. Why? Because it's causing the defender to work harder. It's brilliant, man. Like,
happy birthday,
like,
to
on
Chet,
every single
bro.
Way.
Thank you.
What?
Happy birthday to Chet. Thanks on Handy Train. Appreciate that. Sorry to cut you off, bro, but
No, you're good.
Carson, what's up?
Carson? But it's the way that he is teaching these guys to go through, and it's a coaching staff helping these guys to understand how to make Josh more successful. And I think about that because of the reality of the situation we are in. Is yes, this is Shea's team. He is the superstar in this team. But with every superstar, you need somebody to direct the traffic. And fortunately for us, we have a 6'9 Australian young man on this team that is going to be in the NBA for probably 20 years, guys. Like, he is truly spectacular. I think about the way that he plays and the style of play. And this is the style of play would work in the 90s, would work in the 80s, it would work in the early 2000s. It would work now. Like, that's the thing about Josh's style of play. It's timeless, man. It's completely fucking timeless. And how many NBA players can we truly say that about? Like, even if we say Michael Jordan, people are like, well, yeah, he would have like 60 points a game in this league. But
Josh could be the next Scotty, Robert says.
Like, I mean, seriously, guys, what Josh is capable of doing is so next level. He is leading this team, and I cannot say enough about it. Like, we need somebody like that to direct the traffic and to recognize that he's okay with getting 15 assists and 4 or 5 points because he's helping everybody else be successful. You know, it takes a true unselfish player for that to be something that's like that.
Bro, I'm pumped because when I look at it and I see a guy like Sarge, and I know I'm getting stuck on him, but like what he did for J Will was unbelievable. Like, J Will's began the process of, like, you know, really learning how to get a man's rebound, capture the ball, right? He starts doing that, but then he also has this ability to throw a little bit of an outlet pass, and it's a pretty good outlet pass. It's not as good as Kevin Love's, but we've seen Kevin Love throw three of them yesterday. Holy cow! But
the thing though is that the fact that we can say Jay Wills isn't as good as Kevin Love's should be a direct indication, because Kevin Love's been in the league for over a decade, and Jay Will spent 1 year in the league, right? Not even a full year. I think he played in like 45 games or something like that. And the fact is that people are saying that.
Well, we're saying
should
it.
Be a direct indication that only time.
Well, like I was telling the kids we were watching that game. I was like Kevin Love has been throwing that outlet pass since he was in college with Russ. And they were just, that's how they would tear up teams. They're just like, run it. And so he was out there throwing it still and proving that he's a really good player. But the thing where I look at Sarge and I look at Jay Will, like, Sarge has this ability to grab a rebound and dribble in one motion and be moving up court. He's like, he grabs it and goes. Whereas, like, a lot of people will grab the rebound, turn and go. He's like running into it. He like finds this way to accelerate. And I saw by the end of the season, Jay Will was doing the same thing. He would grab a rebound, immediately put the ball on the floor and start dribbling it. And not necessarily to dribble it up, but to move into an open space so he could easily throw that over the head outlet pass. And it's just a combination of Sarge and
he's moving to a space because he recognized when he moves to that space, there's nobody in the lane.
So there's this like mentality like right now where players are benefiting from the expertise of veterans who are out there teaching them the style of play that will be successful long-term in the NBA. That's a Sam Presti specialty, and we're just going to see that increase.
What's up, Smitsa?
What's up?
Carson, I like it, man. Big men are always wanted on this team. I just think about the reality of what is being taught in the locker room. And one time when I was sitting, well, last year when we were watching Josh Giddey dominate while Shea was out, the question started happening, like, what is Josh Giddey the point guard, you know? And I think this season it really solidified what Josh Giddey is.
What is he?
Josh Giddey is, when it comes to it, he is the leader on the offense. He directs the traffic. He tells these guys where to go, the back doors that are open. When Josh has the ball, the offense is moving the best. It just is. I mean, because everybody on defense is now on alert. Because what's happening? Josh has the ball. Everybody's like, I can't get back door. I can't get back, you know, this, that. Don't get, you know, beat on the screen. Like, it's constant, man. And when you're in the defense's head, it's over. But the problem is when the defense is focusing on Josh because they can't get beat and look like stupid idiots, right? What happens? They leave Shea unprotected, right? They leave Isaiah Joe. They leave Jay Will. They leave, I mean, the list goes on. The alley-oop for Chet's going to be there. When I was watching it and understanding where Sam Presti and Coach D, because I believe they work hand in hand, right, is what they want for the future, is that you look at the style that Shea plays. He is most successful on the right side, okay, on offense. He drives downhill, okay, and he has more space to get to that middle of the court, all right? He loves to go hard with his left hand to the middle of the court, all right? Knowing that, let's make that successful by keeping in that position consistently, you know? And you know what? I don't care what. Take up the ball 20 times a game, 30 times a game, Shea. You know, whatever. Take it up a third of the time of the game. But the reality is that this team, when Josh is in control of the ball, telling people where to go, talking to the guys, I mean, he's a very vocal leader. You know, and we're just a better team with Josh on the floor and directing the traffic. Now, Josh can direct the traffic in the corner, and we've seen it happen. You know, Josh is in the corner, and he's saying, Shea, bae, Shea, Shea. And then next thing you know, Josh comes up, gets the ball, boom, backdoor Shea. Or boom, you know, Shea wide open for three. So, again, it's the understanding of sometimes it's not necessarily taking up the ball, but recognizing where the open guy is going to be and going and fucking taking the ball from the whoever has it. And that's what Josh does. And I think that's why when you're looking at it, having him as a quote-unquote leader on defense or on offense is key. You know, when Shea comes down there and he doesn't have to take the extra dribbles and the extra physical contact right off the bat bringing up the ball. You know, let Josh do that, you know? Let yourself get an extra 15 seconds without getting massive physical contact. I mean, that saves somebody, especially if you're looking at a possession, you're saying we have 24 seconds and 15 of the seconds are going to be running the offense until Shea gets the ball and getting downhill.
Yeah, for sure. Mwani's mentioning that, and he's right, man. He's just so glad we're not like Memphis because of how much smack they talk. And you know what? Like, to some extent, it's okay to talk smack as long as you back it up, because then it's not really smack. You know what I mean? Like,
dude,
that's where you can't talk before you win. And if you lose, you better own up to it. And yeah, that's
when I was 14, man, I, you know, when I was 14, I was like 6 foot tall, right? My dad is like 5'7". He says he's 5'8", but I don't even give him that really. So he's 5'7". And I said to my dad, I said, Dad, I will trade you all my presents if you can beat me in a wrestling match at 14 years old. I'm, you know, 14, I'm probably close to 170 pounds, you know, 180 pounds, big dude at 14. And my dad looks at me and goes, deal. Kicks my fucking ass, guys, at 5'7". And I think about that a lot because I felt like I was watching.
Got in your head, bro.
Right? What I was watching against Memphis, right, was LeBron being like, I'm your fucking daddy. And you guys, I mean, we talked about before we got on, you poked the fucking bear. Like, what the fuck were you guys doing?
Save like
you, all right, you're playing in the backyard, guys, right? And this has happened to all of us, right? You're playing in the backyard against your uncle or, you know, your dad's friend who's, you know, really good at basketball, and you're beating the shit out of him, right? And you kind of start swaggering, talking a little trash, right? And then what happens? You accidentally catch him with a fucking elbow right in the face. And what do they say? Fucking game on. And you know you're fucked.
You're fucked. Man, that's, I mean, I love it, dude. I think that's what we're watching. We're watching, like, kind of like the nitty-gritty, the basics of competition. Back to playground-style basketball, bully ball.
That's it.
Like, we're going to pick on you until you find a way to stop that. And then we're going to pick on that until we stop that. And
that's what's so, the playoffs are so difficult. And that's why I want to say we can win in the playoffs. But the reality is that a lot of the playoffs, man, even if we can win the first year, the second year is going to be maybe a hard knocks, a learning, a moment of hard knocks. Like, shit, we should have done this different. We should have done this different. So the reality is it doesn't matter. In the course of 10 years, a decade, if we make it to the playoffs 10 straight years, we're going to see at least 3 times early exits. And that's just going to happen. It's going to suck. And when it happens, but that's what we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I heard Van Gundy after the game talking about the Kings, and it was like, I think he said this might be the furthest they make it. Like, which is difficult to hear. What's up, Blake? But like,
Blake,
the truth is, you don't know. You don't know if you're going to have injuries next year. You don't know if you're going to be able to maintain that same level of record that you had. It's going to be difficult. So I think the same thing with the Thunder. Like, we look at it, we're like, year after year, we should get better and better and better. But that may not actually be the case. Like, there are going to be some steps backwards as this goes. Now, let's talk about a little bit about the draft. We don't want to get too caught up with it, but...
Yeah, and the reason is, I want to say this is because Mark and I just keep on tearing into places, you know, these draft picks, guys, and we keep on saying to ourselves, 5 through 15 is some of the most complicated players we've, I mean, really, 5 through 20, some of the most complicated players we've I mean, really ever scouted, man. Like, and this is where we're going to be picking. So, I mean, we could be jumping up a few spots here and there or whatever, but the reality is that 5 through 20 is our sweet spot this year, and it's super complicated. I've never been able to look at a draft and be like, oh well, it's going to be one of 6 players. I mean, every single draft we've literally, you know, whittled it down to 2 players within a few moments of the draft. You know, like, we knew exactly who the Thunder were going with.
Right.
This time it's different, man. Yeah, like, and it's different because there's so many players that are highlighted. Exactly what we need and what the Thunder team are looking for.
And we also had a pick in the top 5, although Giddy was number 6.
Good point.
And then it was like, oh, we also had some a little bit later, so we could really cover the whole lottery. And here we're looking at it, and I'm thinking, first of all, the one guy that I don't understand why isn't ranked higher, he's like a late first rounder, maybe second rounder, but Chris Murray.
Oh, yeah. Like, is that the Murray little brother?
What? But they're twins,
or
bro.
Older brother?
Yeah, like, I think he's... They're twins, so I don't know which one's older.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize they're twins.
And he's averaging 20 a game at Iowa this year. I'm like, you know, with the new CBA, this is a great exercise because it's like, are older players more valuable?
They are.
Okay. So
they're more valuable. But the thing is, this year's not the year everybody realizes it, though. I mean, there'll be a few people that realize it, but not many.
I think a guy like Chris Murray could be incredibly valuable because he's a, you know, good offensive player, good defensive player.
You think he's a lot like Al Horford?
I think he's a lot like his brother, like, which is ridiculous, but he's left-handed. And I'm just like, you know, if we could grab him, even though he's projected to go like number 30, like, I would assume that within a year he could be a contributor on the court. Yeah. And I'm not really sure. For sure.
So if he slips to that second round, you could see Sam trading his 2 picks to jump up and trade him?
No, I think we wouldn't wait for him in the second round.
You're saying we would jump up late in the first round?
Or maybe he climbs the draft boards. Maybe we pick him up with that pick that we have.
Because, you know, there's always a team like at that, like, 27, 28, 29, 30 a spot, right? That are like, we can't have first round money on this, the books. And they're willing to trade like 2 second round to 3 second rounds for that.
Well, so, imagine Chris Murray starts climbing the draft boards, right? And he, by the time, yeah, like, the draft is approaching, he's like top 20,
Okay.
Then you might take him at 12 or 13, wherever your pick falls. Because sure. if he's the fit, like, I know that there's other players. I know that, like, when you look at the depth, like you said, 5 through 15.
It's so complicated.
It is complicated because you look at it, you're like, okay, there's a consensus top 4-ish, top 6-ish. Like, there's, like, this range where people are like, okay, I know what's right. They're usually wrong, and they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But sure. the consensus, whatever that represents. And then you have that next group, and they're like, there's players that, like, player after player after player. And I'm, like, wondering, like, a player like, I don't know, J-Dub, guy we got yeah. last year at 12, where would he go in this draft? Would he be someone higher than 12 this draft, or would he be later than 12? Because I feel like he'd be later because of the depth.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Because of you know how those players come in the league and they change how everybody's drafted, mm-hmm. right? And the J-Dub really threw a foil in it. And the reason is that I think there's going to be guys that are long and lanky, or or like Chet with long arms. Not Chet, I'm sorry, J-Dub with long arms. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, these guys are going to be like 17, 18, 19, 20. I think those guys have a better chance to end up in the top 10, to be honest, because teams are going to overvalue the arm length because they're seeing the success the Oklahoma City Thunder are having and other teams that have put that out there as being something that's important to them. And I think it's one of those things, because of that, people may be focused on a few of the wrong players. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then yeah, the Thunder are going to score in this one. The Thunder aren't only going to score, but the Thunder could pick up a second pick in the top 15 for almost nothing because people are just being stupid.
And Mwani says he's a big fan of Jairus Walker from Houston. I'm actually not like super familiar with his game.
Houston's a great school, man. I think that the way they also develop players, I think that there's a very few schools that I consider know what they're doing when it comes to true development. And I think that Houston has done a crazy, amazing job at keeping players there and continuing to develop.
So, shout out to Kelvin Sampson, for real, man.
I mean, that's it. I mean, he's Oklahoma legend. When I was in middle school, man, his son played for a team up there in Norman. And I used to play against him 2 or 3 times a year. So from 7th grade, 8th grade, and I would always see his dad in the stands. I was always super intimidated because, his dad was a coach there at Oklahoma.
He was a really good Oklahoma coach. He didn't get a University. Lot of love for what he did, but he was a very, very good coach, and I think he's done a great job with Houston. Blake wants to know how we feel about Jimmy Butler being MJ's son. We have
we've discussed this
100% unbiased proof that he is. We're unwilling to share that with everybody at this moment, but you can just write it down. They are related.
Blake, I would do this if I were you. There's a stretch thing. I don't want to get sued by anybody by putting out their stuff. So it's what we're saying is not true. I want to make sure that everybody knows that. All right. But if you Google it and you spend some time Googling,
if you fall Jimmy down Butler, a Google hole,
Michael Jordan and Jimmy Butler's mom. Listen, you guys will be able to put the clues together yourself. So,
Carson wants Anthony Black.
Yes, Anthony Black, dude. Anthony Black or Rupert, right? Rayan Rupert. Oh my gosh, any of these guys that have that ability to get down hole hard and play defense really hard and have long arms. Man, I love Black. He's an Arkansas guy. Right. Even better, you know, like that. They develop players properly. I mean, think about this, guys. The NFL draft just happened. Teams that develop players properly always end up getting the top picks in the draft. Just happens. Like at Georgia, they had like 4 or 5, 6 defensive players taken in the first couple of rounds. Like, it's just automatic, man. You know, like, this team is going to put out the best players out there. And whoever Sam picks up, it doesn't matter. But looking at the fact that Sam loves Arkansas and the way that these players are raised and trained, I would not be surprised if Black is on right on the top of the radar for Sam Presti.
Well, the depth of this draft, like we've been mentioning, is pretty great. I
know, and guys, people will tell you it's not. People will say the best, it's just 4. Boom. Top 4 are the best in the draft. But I'm telling you guys,
year, man.
This is the draft to pick up a player in that 15 to 10 range.
So I'm looking at the Ringer's, Kevin O'Connor's big board. Let's talk about this. They got Victor at number 1, Brandon Miller at number 2, and Scoot at number 3. Whatever. Like, Kevin O'Connor sometimes gets stuck up his asshole, but it's not a big deal. So
I like Scoot. I would say Scoot has a legit chance at.
But
yeah, whatever.
Then number 4 and 5 are the Thompson twins. And I'm actually not really familiar with the Thompson twins game.
The Amari.
And Azir. And, because they play for the Overtime Elite. And that just, that gets kind of like.
But one is definitely better than the other. It's interesting that they put them next to each other now.
All right.
Or Connor.
Then number 6 would be Anthony Black, according to him. 7 would be Jairus Walker. 8, Taylor Hendricks, which I'm not particularly familiar with his game. Cam Whitmore at number 9. I watched him coming into it because, you know, Villanova, you like to see what they have.
If he was slipped to number 9, I would be like, Thunder should trade up 3 picks to get Cam because I love Cam.
Go ahead. like each one of these guys, Kevin O'Connor puts like a comparison. Like Taylor Hendricks is Jeremy Grant / Jaden McDaniels. Jairus Walker is Larry Johnson, Carl Landry. So nice. Cam Whitmore is shades of a semi truck with a Ferrari accelerator. He didn't even try and play.
Bam.
Cason Wallace, number 10. I watched some of his game.
Yeah, Cason's good.
He's good, but I don't think he's going
to
be.
He's got so much more to develop.
Right, he's probably not going to be our guy. Grady Dick.
I don't want to be talking shit on anybody, but he's the type of player that a team has 2 years and they say, I got 2 years.
Yeah. Grady Dick, everybody is a big fan of him right now. Baylor, Keontae George. At number 12, that's right where the Thunder are. Bradley Beal, Jaden Hardy, comparisons for him. And Nick Smith Jr. at 13. Ryan Rupert at 14.
It's Rayan. Rayan Rupert.
Yeah, you're right. I always just read it Ryan.
I know. I had to get it told I was saying it wrong by multiple people. So.
All right. So, and he has shades of Mikal Bridges and Otto Porter. And Dave knows.
I love that dude.
Since Mikal Bridges' rookie year, I've been all over it. Him and now everybody else is all over him, and I get it. He deserves it. In fact, Mikal Bridges is the reason I fell in love with J-Dub, is because I was looking at comps and I was like, hey, maybe J-Dub's better, but whatever. Go ahead, Dave.
No. I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't know, man. There's so many players that I look in this draft that I have to say that like really catch my attention.
All right, so let's talk about what we have at just what's listed at 11. 12, 13, and 14. Ryan Rupert, Nick Smith Jr., Keontae George, and Grady Dick. Pick now.
All right. If I'm Sam Presti saying that I want to have somebody that's going to go out there and put big minutes in the game for me right away, I'm going with some big-ass Dick.
All right, you're going Dick.
If I'm going for the opportunity to have halfway through the year somebody coming on, I'm going Rayan Rupert. So a slight development.
I'm going Nick Smith Jr. And I'm not even questioning.
And then I was going to say, if you want a whole year of development, go Nick Smith Jr.
All right. So Nick, because he's an Arkansas guy and because Dave likes Arkansas more than people who even live in Arkansas, and that's cool. Dude. That's cool. But I was like, I got to check
Arkansas,
this guy's game out coming into like, – he was ranked – projected.
He's so good.
Like he could have been a lot higher.
The reason that I'm not so much more on Nick Smith Jr. is because the fact that you can't really describe his game. And that's one of the things I loved about it, right? The way his game is that it's not really a shooting guard or point guard. Well, what is that? J-Dub, that's Shea, that's Josh Giddey. So, you know, obviously I like him because I'm already changing my posture here. So Nick Smith Jr., though, the reality of what this young man could do is truly spectacular in the NBA. But what I feel like you need with him is to be able to be open with him saying, because we're so deep at this position, I need you to be okay with developing in a whole year in the G League. And the thing about that is that it might not even need a full year, but I think that's a thing you have to go to the table with him. Right, that's why I said if Sam Presti is going for somebody that's going to put in right away, that's Dick.
All right, so let's talk about Nick. Nick is 6'5", 185, just turned 19, according to this.
He's very, very big comps to J-Dub.
All right, this KOC gives him comps to Jamal Murray and Tyler Hero, which my theory is I always say this, like, if you're drafting in this range, right, after the top 10, but still in the lottery, you need to find a player like Shea, like Tyler Hero, like Nick Smith Jr. Maybe it's not him, but like a guy that can give you all that offensive upside and develop into being like a perennial all-star type player. Like,
absolutely.
I know that, you know, Jamal Murray is, Tyler Hero isn't, but he has the opportunity to become that. I really like Tyler's game. So I'm really impressed that Nick has fallen down that far. They call him a slippery scorer who can get any shot he wants.
But the reason he's falling down this far is because everybody's putting out that the guys with long arms, you know, these top of the draft, you know, thoughts that, oh, this guy's going to be really good, we got to get this player. You know, like, how many times do we see a player that everybody's so confident is going to be great from 3 to 9 just fucking bomb? You know?
Yeah, like every year there's like at least one, but sometimes 2 or 3.
But how many times do we see a player in the talks for rookie of the year from 10 to 21? Every year. And to me, that's why Sam Presti went out and got Vince, right?
Yeah, Vince Rosman.
That's why he went out, man. He got him because he knew that this is the money. This is when the NBA is changing and everybody's like, where the fuck is where's it going? Who's going to be good? Who's going to be wanted? And then all of a sudden, Giannis comes in the place. Or you've got Kawhi. Or you got Shea. Because nobody knows where the NBA is going. But if you have somebody to help direct the way, all of a sudden you can pick up players like this guy or that guy, this guy, and being like, you know, Nick Smith Jr., like in any other draft that he was capable of being recognized because the change of the NBA, there's no way he won't go top 3. Like, and I think that's the thing about what's happening with the NBA is that these are the years to get these mid picks, and we've got so many of them coming up. You know, we'll be able to move up and down wherever we want to, add more picks, take away more picks, whatever. But the reality is that we're not going to be able to see a group of guys like we have ever drafted again, because nobody will ever allow that to happen. Nobody would ever allow Josh Giddey to go past number 3 in the future. Nobody ever will allow J-Dub to go past number 3 in the future. Nobody would ever allow Chet not to go number 1. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what happens when a powerful team is built. Everybody goes back and saying, how the fuck did they get those players at those positions?
And Blake, I'm with you, man. If we could get J-Dub's brother, I've seen him. He's pretty so legit. I don't think this is his draft, but, you know, coming up, we'll see what happens, man. Definitely a legit player, and J-Dub, you know, big-time fan of him. Josh, you're saying that Ozier, Ran, or Hendricks are all Presti picks. And I was looking at it as you were saying that, and I was looking at Ran, and he has a 7'3" wingspan. At
Rupert,
bro.
Rupert.
Rupert. I mean, you're talking like... He
breakers, man. New Zealand breakers, Australian dude, freaking straight
six,
up.
6'6".
His defense is... I mean, guys, if you just go back and look at his defense, I mean, it's immediately... Like, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't get past... I think he's going top 10. Because, again, guys that have really long freakish arms are going to be evaluated as way more valuable than ever before. And because of that, these guys are going to go jump up and, you know... It's, you know, I could say that Sam Presti is going to trade up to get some picks, but the price of trade up is going to be so expensive this year, it's almost not worth it. And it would almost be rather just to sit back. But what's going to happen is there's always going to be a team around 13, 14, 15 that's going to be like, I don't like who my options are. I got to get the fuck out of here. And they'll want to trade out. So, again, this is the year to get two of them again.
Hell yeah, Carson, we're watching that Warriors-Lakers series. For sure, man. We're all into this shit. We mourned our Thunder losing for a little bit, but the playoffs are on,
basketball.
Baby.
It's but when Game 7 start happening, you know it's good.
Game 1 in New York, that was special. John Starks in the arena. Patrick Ewing. Pat Riley. Alonzo Mourning.
All the people, man.
Dwayne
Well,
Wade.
I mean, think about like Pat Riley, though. The fact that he was... I still think about this because it hurt so bad when it happened, but Pat Riley was a New York Knick. You know, had this great team as a Knicks coach. And then out of the blue, ESPN broke. And I remember just watching it and just my mouth would dropped open and said, Pat Riley takes job for the Miami Heat. and like got ownership stake and all this other shit. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And I knew the Knicks are never going to be able to recover off of that. And it's just great that all these years later, the Knicks are finally having a little bit of success. Even might be just slight, but it's just nice to see.
It is nice to see, and we're excited about that. Classic series coming up, Lakers-Warriors. Two gladiators going head-to-head.
What do you got, man? What do you got? And how many games? Who are you picking?
I honestly don't think the Lakers can outscore the Warriors, so I'm going to go Warriors. But
dude, I'm going straight up Lakers, dude. There's too much heart. Like, LeBron, you woke up the fucking bear. Like, you're not going to be able to put the bear asleep.
There we go. We'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We love you. Josh, Carson, boom. Blake, Moani, you guys are the best.
All you guys.
Smitsta, Robert, Alfonso, Unhandy. I hope I didn't miss anybody. You guys are awesome.
Appreciate it.
We'll be back. We'll see you soon.